First time.
Yeah.
House Committee on Revenue for April 25th, 2017, will come to order. Colleagues, we're going to go out of order a bit to deal with our agenda. So let's open a work session on House Bill 2088. Kyle, do you want to tell us what these what this does? And there are two amendments. If you'd describe those as well, that would be helpful.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair. So House Bill 2088 is a bill that's relating to property taxation and essentially how the value of, for the most part, this is going to be a new property that's coming onto the tax roll. So it's property that's being new improvements. Generally, you can think of a new home or a new piece of commercial property. There's also cases where a property that comes out of special assessment or out of an exemption. The way it gets placed on the roll right now is, it's important to remember there's the distinction between real market value and assessed value of property. And assessed value is the property to which the taxes are applied. So using the example of the new property coming on the roll, to determine that assessed value, or really the maximum assessed value, is you use a ratio for the type of property that it is, the class of property, based in the county today. So you look at, well, what's the ratio of the real market value of, say, residential properties and their maximum assessed value, and then you apply that ratio against the real market value of the new piece of property coming on the roll to determine the new property's maximum assessed value. And so the requirement of doing the maximum assessed value and everything, that's in the Constitution, but exactly how to come up with that ratio is determined in statute. And so that's the difference in House Bill 2088 would make that change, is changing, it's given the authority, I should say, to cities to change that ratio, how that ratio is determined. Rather than using a countywide ratio, they'd use the ratio based upon the values within their city. And so there's a couple amendments. I do have some. In some of the discussion during the public hearing, there was questions about the number of cities that could benefit. Because, of course, a city that's going to benefit the most is a city that is has a ratio more different from their countywide ratio. So if a city has, say, real market values and assessed values closer together, then new property coming on the roll would come on at a higher maximum assessed value and would yield higher taxes in that case. So I put together some information to help give a sense of the different cities throughout Oregon that would be more likely to benefit from taking advantage of an option to do this. So that's in the meeting materials under House Bill 2088.
Is that the one called comparisons?
Yes, that is, Mr. Chair. So it starts out with just a quick overview, and the committee saw some of this in the testimony by the city of Gresham as well, of just how that CPR difference can really make a difference in how the taxes are computed. So that's up at the, if we scroll up on the screen, you can see just a quick comparison for a new piece of property. But if you had example, and it's fairly extreme, this isn't the statewide example, but it's, for example purposes, wanted to be able to show a difference here. But if you have a countywide CPR of, say, 0.650, and you compare that to a citywide CPR of 0.850, the same piece of property that's worth $300,000, so that's the real market value of, say, a new home being built, the maximum assessed value using the countywide CPR of 0.65 would be $195,000, with a combined tax rate of about $17 per $1,000 would yield taxes of $3,300, $3,315. If you use the citywide CPR of 0.85, you get a maximum assessed value of $255,000, and you get tax imposed of about $4,335. Mm-hmm. So the tax difference is about $1,000. And that puts the comparison, again, more in line with the types of properties or the values of properties within that city as well. So you have less of that case where a new piece of property being built next to an existing piece of property, they could be valued the same, but their taxes are significantly different. So it would narrow some of that gap. But that gives you a sense. And again, that maximum assessed value is then allowed to grow 3% per year. So when you have this change, you then put in place, if you get a maximum assessed value at a lower value than you otherwise would, that benefit continues on each year because your maximum assessed value is limited to 3% growth. So that difference won't generally narrow between RMV and MAV. But that's a quick example of just how it actually mechanically it works. Scrolling down a bit, what I did, and this is based upon the information that we have available to us, LRO, and I would stress that what you see in front of you, these are estimates. So we don't have necessarily the information, the county level detail information to make actual computations, but these are estimates of the difference. So this may not line up completely with what, say, a county would produce as the actual change property ratio figures, but it does do a pretty good job of giving an indication of the differences between the city and the county. But what I did was I looked at the residential class, the commercial class, and the multifamily class, and I was looking at if a city was to adopt this, what would their citywide CPR be compared to their countywide? So if their citywide CPR would be equal to their countywide, so no difference, it'd be 100%. So it's the percentage difference of the countywide. So the further you are above the 100%, the more benefit the city would see, the higher the taxes would be that would be imposed, because the maximum assessed value would be higher on the new piece of property. So the city would see more benefit the further above the 100%. So that's why I categorize them 95 to 105%. You may see some difference there, whether or not a city would want to adopt that if they're at, say, 101%, so their CPR is just slightly higher than the countywide one. Again, this is only for new pieces of property coming on the roll or new additions or something to that effect. So generally, you're going to need to see a little bit more in the CPR difference to really make it worth the city's while to do this.
And it has to be growing.
Right, Mr. Chair, yeah. But you can see that there is, I added, or just the ones, the total above 105% to give you some indication. There is about 50 or so cities, it ranges 50 for the residential, 40 or so in the multifamily, that would benefit from making this change. And then on the second page, I just listed the top 15 cities in each category. And you can see there at the top is the city of Gresham is leading the way in the residential, commercial, and the multifamily. But in a lot of cases, there's
Manners.
That's one. We could do a dash three.
No, at some point,
have a question. Oh, please, go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Marsh,
hold on.
Can you clarify, would this legislation require the calculation to be done, could the calculation be done as specifically as on different classes of property, residential, commercial, multiple family, or does it have to be across all, I think there's six classes of assessments done by appraisers?
Yes, Representative Marsh, the language in the measure and with the amendments, the way the CPR is computed, it is done on a property class basis.
Right.
But it isn't specific to where the city would pick the property class. They couldn't say, well, we'll do this for residential, we won't do it for commercial. So it's you have to take it all in one.
It's all property classes or none. So
yes.
The breakdown that you've shown here is for a demonstration of what this might look like, except that just because you ranked well in multiple families doesn't mean that the calculation as a whole would benefit you. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, Representative Marsh. And part of that is the information that we have doesn't allow us to actually, I couldn't do this for specially assessed property, farm property, forest property. And these are going to be your predominant. I mean, residential is really going to be maybe your deciding factor, yeah.
Yeah, please.
One more question. Can you also talk, and maybe you're getting there, as to the impact of this on the counties that have now the remainder of the calculation? What's the if a city pulls out, what is likely to be the impact on the remaining county properties?
Yeah, so the way it, Representative Marsh, the way it's structured right now is if you're taking it, it's going to depend upon the number of cities that would adopt something to this effect. But you would expect over time there would be the change in the maximum assessed value, because you're increasing that maximum assessed value in the cities, there's going to be an increasing for even the countywide figure. It's going to be a pretty slight increase that I haven't gone to that level analysis to actually run it through saying let's look through it for 5 years or something to that effect, because in many cases the cities that are most likely to benefit are usually a city that is perhaps dwarfed by a much larger city that has had a lot more growth in the last 15 or 20 years, say the city of Gresham to compared to the city of Portland. So even as those figures, and if for example the city of Gresham were to adopt this, even as the maximum assessed value is creeping up in the city of Gresham, its impact upon the countywide figures is going to take quite a while to really move those.
Take a second to explain the different way in which the other change ratios for the rest of the county would be done as compared to the ones in the city that have made this choice, because I think that answers Representative Marsh's question. Rather than trying to guess what I'm thinking, let me tell you what I'm thinking. I believe that when the change value is calculated, change ratio is calculated for the rest of the county, the numbers in Gresham are included in the actual assessed values in Gresham are included in that calculation. And therefore, if the assessed values in Gresham are slightly higher because of the of this mechanism, that would result in the mechanism for the entire county to be slightly higher just because, but not very much, just because Gresham's small compared to the rest of the county. The calculation isn't for the rest of the county isn't done on just everything outside of Gresham. It includes Gresham.
Okay.
Yes, you said that better than I can, Mr. Chair. And another important piece is this is for all accounts within that property class. So the change is only on those maybe new built homes. So if you have 200 new built homes, but that's going against 180,000 that are existing or something to that effect, it's going to take a long time, even before at the three decimal rounding, you're really making much change.
Yeah. Okay, let me ask, do we have the fiscal and we don't. So we're not going to move this bill today anyway. Since we are open, why don't you explain to us what the amendments do? We'll close the bill. We'll carry it over till tomorrow, and hopefully we'll have, by that time, hopefully we'll know which amendment we're going to move, and so that we don't make LRO and LFO guess on what paperwork we need.
Well, maybe we could decide now.
Well, we might be able to.
No.
We might be able to. Go ahead and explain the amendments quickly, if you would, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair. So the Dash 3, the way that it deviates from the introduced version is it's still allowing the city to adopt through the ordinance or resolution process whether or not to make this change. But there are some changes in the introduced version in that when the city does this, they are limited to making this change no more than once every 5 years or within a five-year period. So if a city decides to do this, they then can't change back or something 2 years later. They have to wait at minimum 5 years to make that change. It does allow the county assessor to withhold some of the city district property tax distributions up to $20,000 to cover the costs that are incurred by the county assessor in the software upgrades required to be able to do this computation with the CPR. The Dash 4 is the same as the Dash 3, except it applies only to, in this case, cities within Multnomah County, and then it also would remove the cost reimbursement language since it would only be to Multnomah County rather than available to all the cities in the state.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Representative Nels.
thank you, Mr. Chair. I am agnostic as to which amendment is preferred by the group, so whatever amendment leads to passage of this bill is the amendment that I would prefer.
Thank you. Other discussion? I suppose we might as well go ahead and move the amendment today so that we can tell LFO and LRO what we want the bill to look like, if that works for you, Representative Betts.
Mr. Chair, the Dash 4 is the Multnomah County amendment. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move.
just a moment. Representative Buehler, before we move the motion.
I'd appreciate at least a day to check with the cities in Central Oregon and Deschutes County, since several of them are listed on here, to get their opinion. I'm not sure they're really aware, but no one's had any conversation with
you'd like to do that this afternoon?
Do that this afternoon.
Okay. Once you've done that, would you communicate with Representative Benson and with LRO so we can get the paperwork for tomorrow?
Yep.
All right. Is that okay with people?
Yes.
All right. Well, with that, we'll leave it at that point. Representative Buehler is going to do some work and get back to us, and we'll reopen this. We'll reopen this work session tomorrow, and with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2088 and open a work session on House Bill 3291. And I think I said this already, but we're carrying over 2088 till tomorrow for work. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
I'll leave it to you to fight with me.
The Gresham people are all nervously leaving.
Paul.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3291, you've had a hearing on. You have an unamended version. And the bill does have a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. What it does is set up a process for budget stress tests and directs the legislative revenue officer and the legislative fiscal officer to set up that process to look how hypothetical economic conditions could affect state finances. Has that them do a report the last calendar quarter of each even numbered year. We have done some of this in the past, really in two ways on the revenue side. One, based on historical declines and recessions, where we've looked at the proportional decline in income tax and general fund revenue, and also in terms of kind of looking at the margin of error around our close of session forecasts and what's the range in which we've seen historically in that potential error, because that could be the real force driving the size of a shortfall. I've had a little bit of discussion with LFO. They have issued a fiscal light to move it to them, and had a little discussion about fiscal impact. I told them we'd need at least three FTE to manage this, but you know,
yeah. Like what?
I think we could.
Paul's busy Empire Building.
No, we gave it a minimal impact, but I know there are some issues around the timing in particular, and so that's be further discussion with LFO when it gets over there.
Is that something you believe that it would be reasonable to manage in the Ways and Means process?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Discussion. What do you want? What should we do with this bill? Do you have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3291 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And a subsequent
referral to Ways and Means.
And a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you. Representative Vince moves House Bill 3291 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. I don't know how many other people want to comment on this, so I would simply note that I think this is a great idea, and it formalizing something that I suspect happens in situations where it feels appropriate to the agencies or the legislative offices that are mentioned here, Paul can do it for fewer than three new staff members. I think it's a great idea. Other, all joking aside, being able to understand the different possible scenarios for different actions the legislature might take based on different economic outcomes that may or may not have anything to do with what we're doing. I mean, it'd be part of the general economy is probably a great idea. I mean, I think one of the issues that has been raised about our current situation, true or false, is that the planning ahead part didn't get done as well as it might have in the past. And this, I think, promotes that planning ahead idea. Anything else? Representative Smith?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Any objection to moving this bill to Ways and Means? No objection. Motion's approved. Bill goes to Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 3291. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 33. Okay. And I assume the same people are going to want to testify as, not quite. Yes, in fact, it is the same people. Lois Williams and Deanna Mack, please tell us about this bill.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 33 would change the computation of the Department of Revenue of interest due on any tax deficiency owed to the department or refunds of tax owed to the department. And it would replace the rate based on a month or partial month with an annual percentage rate that's computed daily. That would just bring things into line with generally accepted accounting practices in the other parts of the world, and also would take advantage of the core replacement and the new system's capabilities for calculating interest. The Dash 1 amendment also incorporates what used to be in House Bill 2050, and Kyle explained that previously when that measure was heard. but it would, the dash one would change the date at which interest begins to accrue on any excess payments for the transient lodging tax and 911 tax to a period of 45 days after the later of the due date of the return or the date the excess was paid. And this is consistent with the way that all the other types of tax are treated in the state, and there's 45 days to kind of suss out whether an amount is owed and for the, to give the DOR a chance to pay any refunds. And so the measure is found to have no expenditure impact and has a minimal revenue impact.
Thank you. Please.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. For the record, my name is Lois Williams with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Senate Bill 33 is brought to you by the governor on behalf of the Department of Revenue. It did pass unanimously through the Senate before coming to you. The statutes that are in this bill have been around for a long time, and they were developed a long time ago when we really didn't have modern tools that would calculate interest as easily as we do today. When using whole or partial months, basically made it easier to calculate interest by hand. No one calculates interest like that anymore. Modern practice throughout financial industry is to use computers and to calculate interest on a daily basis. As Christine explained, the Dash 1 amendments are the result of discussions that came out of the House Revenue Committee during interim hearings last fall. The department was in the process of discussing refunds to E911 tax program retailers. We needed to return 2% of their receipts that they're entitled to keep, but they had erroneously remitted to us. And so it was discovered at that time that neither that program nor the state lodging tax program follows the normal 45-day refund time period for other programs for which we pay interest on. So this amendment that she explained will align both that E911 program and the state lodging tax program with the timelines that we use for the other programs. We do have 45 days from the time that we receive the return to process it and actually determine that an overpayment exists. That's just in a reasonable time, and at the end of that 45 days, if we still haven't issued the refund, then interest starts accruing. So this amendment will create more consistency across the programs that we administer. So in summary, Senate Bill 33, both the introduced and with the Dash 1 amendment, it does not increase or decrease the actual interest rate charged or paid by the department. That rate is set in statute. It's evaluated annually for adjustment based on the rate that the IRS uses. It also does not change the calculation from simple to complex, so we're not changing anything else about the rate itself. And it does apply to all the programs that we administer, with the one exception of the Senior and Disabled Deferral Property Tax Program. That has a separate statutes that govern interest on that program. With that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Right. Questions? It's still not entirely clear to me why we're changing the way in which you describe the same thing. Could you tell us again?
Sure, Chair Barnhart. We do have new tools available to us with our system, mm-hmm. so we have the opportunity to take a look at the way we calculate our interest okay. in line with the statute. And literally, we brought in the new system and we went to calculate and set it up, configure it to calculate interest the way it needed to be done. And it's an outdated mode in our statutes right. versus financial industry today.
In effect, what you're doing is getting rid of rounding. As I understand it, simple interest compounded or computed daily isn't any different from simple interest computed once a year, except that you don't have a rounding error. Mm-hmm. Is that would that be an accurate way of saying it?
Yes, Chair Barnhart.
Thank you. All right. Anything else for these witnesses? All right. Anyone else want to be heard on Senate Bill 33 today? With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 33. Open a work session. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Open a work session on Senate Bill 33. Representative Vence, the Dash 1.
Chair, I move the Dash 1 to Senate Bill 33.
Representative Vence moves the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Bill 33. Discussion? Objections? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Representative Vence?
Chair, I move the Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Vence moves Senate Bill 33 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Okay, now the real question, who'd like to carry this bill? Representative Smith Warner, I mean, my sense of this bill is it's one of the few containing higher math that I think all of us understand. Representative Smith Warner, we'll carry. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 33. We finished our business for today, haven't we, Paul? And I did carry over 2088 till tomorrow for work. I did. Okay, thank you. Representative Bueller, we'll get you out in time for your 2 o'clock meeting.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. That committee is adjourned. It.